I absolutely hate it because generally when we go down there, it's league. So the chances are it's going to be raining and wet, and you're going to the west of Ireland where it's generally raining anyway. And like it's just so it's a terrible place to play because, and I don't mean that by anyone working there. It's just it's so unpredictable.
The Maroon and White Pod brought to you by CityLink. For bookings, timetables, updates, and any other information, head to citylink.ie.
Welcome along to the Maroon and White Pod as round three of the National Hurling League approaches this weekend in Pearse Stadium as Galway take on Dublin, and obviously Micheál Donoghue comes with his Dublin side to Pearse Stadium to take on Galway. And I'm joined this evening by John McIntyre of the Connacht Tribune, and we're going to have former Dublin hurler in a few minutes, Ryan O'Dwyer, as well to look ahead to the clash this weekend. John, just seeing as it's your first time this year on the podcast, what have you made of Galway so far in the league?
I'm not sure, to be honest about it, which is a kind of a strange thing to say, given that they have played three matches so far, and I've seen them in nearly all their Walsh Cup games. Galway have been laying waste to all inferior opposition they've encountered so far in 2024. They're beating poor teams by more than anybody else. And I suppose that shows a certain level of ruthlessness. The problem, though, for Galway so far is that the two games that you would have wanted to see them winning, the Walsh Cup final against Wexford and the National League game against Tipperary and Thurles, they came up short. And I'm not sure how good or how bad Wexford are for starters. They're obviously getting a bounce from the appointment of Keith Rossiter as a manager. And I think it was important for Wexford maybe to shop local this time round when it came to having a new boss. And certainly they were very, very vibrant that day in the final. Galway, of course, you know, their team selection that day would be a long way off, but they're probably going to start in the championship. But still, all the guys they were looking at were on their expanded panel, and they were comfortably defeated in the end. The Tipperary match, again, I'm not sure about how good or how bad Tipperary are. They really bombed out against Galway in the All-Ireland quarter-final last year. Johnny got beaten by 2 points in the end, but Galway were really streets ahead of them. And Liam Cahill had questions to answer after that campaign, especially after losing to Waterford in their final round robin game in the Munster Championship, which cost them a place in the provincial final. But on that day in Thurles, Tipperary seemed to have an edge, Paul, in physical strength and cohesion. They got good starts to both halves. Galway were chasing the game, and ultimately it proved a quest beyond them. So Galway have questions to answer, but they're not that far away. I believe you could argue that they're the biggest threat to Limerick in this year's championship. But they do need to find a little bit of improvement, to step up a bit in last year's form, and maybe to have one or two new championship starters this summer, and that remains to be seen.
We do have Ryan O'Dwyer now. Ryan, thanks for coming on to the podcast. Just what John says there, Galway, the biggest threat to Limerick. Do you agree with that?
Well, look, call a spade a spade. Limerick are out in front of everyone at the moment. I've said a few times already this year and a good few times last year, I think this year coming, I do think Limerick are going to be ahead of everyone by a margin, I think. I think in the league, they might have one or two shaky moments once their championship because it is so keenly contested. There might be tight games, but I think they'll come into their own dollar in the championship. But I do think next year, their biggest challenge is going to be Cork. You saw last year in the championship, Cork came very close to them. I know that Limerick pulled away in the end. But as regards this year, I do think Galway are in a good position. I certainly do think Henry Shefflin bringing Eamon O'Shea into the backroom team, I do think that's going to make Galway better. Eamon does have, he's a strange man, but he does have an influence over people, and he gets across people. He allows people to play with a bit of freedom rather than a rigid type of hurling. Like I suppose it's a controlled freedom that Eamon is going to add to it, and lads will enjoy that. They'll embrace him, and you can see that so far. Like they've put up massive scores already in the league. They've played three games. They put up 4-31 against Westmead. I know you might say it's against Westmead, and they put up 2-35 against Antrim. And I know you might say, but they still put up in poor conditions. They put up 24 points against Tipp. So look, they are putting up big scores. The teams they've had out so far, there's been key players missing from all of those teams that they've played, they've named all along. So I do think they're in a good position for championship. And I know it's league at the moment. We're worrying about that, worrying about the weekend against Dublin. But they do have one eye on the championship. Now, all teams will have one eye on the championship because there's such a quick turnaround. But I do think the teams in Leinster that qualify from Leinster, I do think have a little bit of an advantage. And what I mean by that is any of the five teams in Munster can qualify on any given day. And it's really competitive down there. They absolutely batter each other. And I suppose it's coming out of Munster with as few injuries as possible. Nearly like finishing the league with as few injuries as possible, so you have your team for championship. But I think Leinster, you do have a little bit of leeway. No disrespect to any team, but you'd imagine Kilkenny and Galway, whether they contest the Leinster final or not, remains to be seen. But they will be two teams that are in the top three anyway. And then out of that, it's Dublin or Wexford or possibly Antrim could nick it as well. And no disrespect to Carlow in the Leinster Championship, but they could. And I think the biggest game for both Wexford and Dublin this year in the Leinster Championship is going to be the very first one when they play each other down in Wexford Park, because that's going to decide, really, not going to decide because a lot of things could happen between the start and the end, but that's going to have a massive bearing on the top three.
Just on this weekend then, John, Galway and Dublin, just with where Limerick and Tipp are obviously near the top, and just with this, is this a significant game? Because obviously the top three are guaranteed, then fourth, it obviously comes with the scoring difference. But the position of Galway and Dublin, it's third versus fourth this weekend, where Westmeath and Antrim are in the table. This game takes on a real significance.
It does to a point, but on all known form, you'd expect Galway to carry the day on Sunday and comfortably. I suppose there are a few caveats about this fixture. Ryan O'Dwyer knows this only too well. Dublin tend to play well against Galway. I was writing about it today, and if you only go back to last May, and that's not a million years ago, Dublin led Galway by 12 points early in the second half in the Leinster Championship round robin, and Galway launched a great comeback, took the lead, and yet Dublin, I think, came back late in the game to level twice. They don't mind playing Galway, as I found out to my cost when I was over Galway back, oh God, it's 10, 12 years ago. And of course, making it the fixture even more interesting is the fact that the former Galway All-Ireland winning manager Micheál Donoghue and his two lieutenants, Franny Ford and Noel Larkin, are in their second year in charge of Dublin. Now, I know from talking to Micheál after last year's championship game, like he's dealt with working with a different county other than Galway, and he's parked the emotion, I suppose, about playing Galway. And but this is slightly different on Sunday, because the couple of times he's come across his native county since he came on board as Dublin manager, the games were in Parnell Park and Croke Park. On Sunday, he's coming down in front of his own people in Salt Hill. And I would imagine that Micheál and Noel and Franny will be very anxious that Dublin are as fiercely competitive as they can be. I mean, we all have our reputations, and Dublin's has taken a little bit of a battering going back to last year's championship. It finished on a very feeble note. They lost heavily to Clare in the Gaelic grounds. I know they lost their most influential player, Donal Burke, early in that match. He hasn't been around for most of their games so far this year, although himself and Paul Crummy lined out against Limerick in Croke Park a couple of weeks ago. Dublin were competitive in spells, but The manner in which Limerick blitzed them by the end was concerning. Parnell Park is no longer a fortress for them. Tipperary beat them 11 points up there in the opening round of the league. And they were so lucky to beat Antrim up in Corrigan Park, only for a fumble by the Antrim keeper. And 2 weeks later, at the same venue against the same team, Galway put 25 points on Antrim. So it kind of just gives you an insight that, and I know Micheál and the lads are working overtime trying to unearth new talent. And they do have some significant players in the likes of Danny Sutcliffe. They're missing Owen O'Donnell, unfortunately. But I just wonder, are Dublin beginning to fall away a little bit? Sunday will tell us a bit more. I expect Dublin to be competitive on Sunday, but on what we have seen so far in 2024, and if we are to trust the form, this should be a comfortable victory for Galway. I think Brian Concannon and Cathal Mannion returned to training last weekend. That's a boost for them. It's too early for them to line out against Dublin on Sunday. Declan McLaughlin is still ruled out with a thumb injury. And I think Galway will be keen to put on a display on Sunday. They're virtually guaranteed to make the seven-team new Division One group next year. And even if they beat Dublin, however, they're not guaranteed a place in the league semi-finals after losing to Tipperary. They're probably going to have to go down to the Gaelic grounds if it's playable the following weekend, because Limerick are playing Tip in Parkhickeath on this weekend. So they'll probably have to go down to Limerick and try and beat the All-Ireland champions. But certainly Micheál's presence on the opposition sideline in front of the Galway supporters at a venue he knows only too well certainly adds intrigue to Sunday's fixture.
And we see Joseph Cooney back this weekend, John Eyre.
Well, the media pack spoke to Henry Shetland about that a few weeks ago, and I think he's been late to rejoin the squad, and that's as much as I know. And the way training and conditioning has gone now in modern inter-county team preparation, seemingly if you miss a few weeks training, you're playing catch up for months. And I just on a general level, I just don't know where it's all going to end. I mean, club teams now are doing what county teams were doing 7 and 8 years ago. Everybody knows, it seems, what every other team is doing, whether it's county level or club level. And if you're over a team and you're not doing what the neighbouring parish is doing and you're losing, you'll be accused of being not professional. But if you are doing it and you lose, you'll have supporters saying, well, you gave it everything. But in my view, there are so many people around inter-county teams that don't need to be there. It's simply window dressing and it's fashionable. At the end of the day, the basics are being ignored. If a player drives a ball wide from 30 yards out all on his own, there's no psychologist going to change that moment in time. And that's the way I look at it. Maybe it's a traditional view, but the training that players are being asked to do. And I'm not surprised that a lot of people are walking away from top level hurling and Gaelic football because everything else is being sacrificed.
Do you agree with that, right?
Yeah, I'd agree with a lot, not everything, but I agree with a lot of what John is saying there. I can't agree with everything with the North Tipp man. Yeah, no, I do agree in so much so that you'd wonder where it's going to end. The preparation that every team is taking, and John is saying that like you go back 5 or 6 years, that's the way club teams are now, the way inter-county teams were back then. And yeah, it's just, like even club teams, like you have. I remember you had the manager was the coach, and he had two selectors with him. And now you have a sports psychologist, you have a nutritionist, you have a physio, you have a doctor, you have a stats man, you have a goalkeeping coach. You could go on forever. And look, some of them are justified. I think goalkeeping coach is very important. It's a specialized position and all that. But yeah, you'd wonder where it's going to end. And I'm not on about the backroom teams or anything like that. I'm on about for the players where it's going to end, because the majority is they're either in college, which is kind of the ideal scenario if you're an inter-county player, or they have a job, right? Not every job you can live the lifestyle of an inter-county hurler or footballer, because if you're working a 40-hour week, or it could be more, 44 or 5-hour week if you're doing a bit of overtime or if you're doing shift work or anything like that. Those days are gone. If you go back 30 years ago, a lot, or 30 or 40 years ago, you had your farmers, you had your carpenters, you had your block layers. They were your intercounty players. Now you had a lot of reps as well, or journalists like John. But yeah, you had them. Whereas you can't do that now. The abuse that a carpenter or a block layer, that the abuse that job takes on the body, you need to be a fine-tuned, like you're like a racehorse, you're out in Ballydoyle Stables, preparing for a race, because that's the way how finely tuned your body has to be now, because the rigors of the intercounty season does catch up on you. And you see that throughout, like lads with hip injuries, lads retiring when they before they even hit 30. Like if you have probably a 6-7 year intercounty career at one of the top teams, that's about it. You rarely see, well, you never see a dual player anymore, and you rarely see someone having a 10, 12, 14 year intercounty career unless the manager you have during that time totally understands, you have a good relationship with them, and they're not trying to I suppose dictate and make you work into submission. And I think a lot of that goes with, and I suppose I need to tread carefully here, because a lot of outside managers will say, and this isn't a dig at Dunhu in the slightest, but a lot of outside managers, they're coming in to do a job. If they don't get the results in that first year or two, well, then people start to question their loyalties. People start to question their motives. Or are they doing it for the big payday? Are they doing it for whatever? I've heard everything at this stage. Whereas if you have someone from the county, or even someone in your backroom team from the county that's very well respected in the county, I think you can see, you can plan a little bit more long term, and you can say, right, this lad coming out of under 20s now, we'll just give him a year to develop and we'll see what he is next year. Rather than just, yeah, he's the great white hope, but rather than just throwing him in now, we'll give him time to, I suppose, do his apprenticeship. But look, I suppose I've gone off the topic there, but the real question was, the where's it going to end is like the training that is, and the prep that's involved now is just ridiculous. And it's not even the training. Like, I suppose what finished my intercounty career, I could have trained every day, 10 times a day. But what killed me was after training for an hour and 20 minutes or whatever, you go have a shower and then come up for a meeting. And that meeting would last another hour of analysis and opposition when a 10-minute meeting would have done. You know, that it just it to take it out of you, and it just mentally it's very draining, rather than physically, mentally it's very, very draining.
Just on this point, John, is this not where the intercounty game is going to go until someone catches Limerick, because they're setting the standard and it's getting higher and higher every year?
Well, I just think, regardless of what training Limerick do or don't do, what we have here is an exceptional group of players. And I have stood beside some of those Limerick individuals, and I used to be 6'1", and I'm looking up, I'm getting a crick in my neck, looking up at the likes of Dermot Burns and Kyle Hayes and Gerard Hegarty. They are giants of men, and hurling increasingly is becoming a power game. We've seen that in professional rugby. You know, the hits are savage, and hurling is, I won't say heading down that track, but unless you're able to look after yourself physically now at the highest level in hurling, or even at club level, you struggle. And Limerick are just, they have an exceptional group of players coming together at the one time, and what they're doing, they're rewriting the record books for the county. Limerick won an All-Ireland title in 1940. They had a good decade in the 30s. They didn't win another Liam McCarthy until 1973. And then they went until 2018 to get their hands on silverware again. And for a proud hurling county like Limerick to win a single All-Ireland from 1940 to 2017, I think was, it simply wasn't good enough. Because back to, they had not that long ago, maybe 20 years ago, they had a Limerick under 21 team that won 3 All-Irelands on the trot, and they really got nothing from it. But now they've won 5 All-Irelands in 6 years, and attempting in 2024 to go where no other hurling team has gone before. I sound like Captain Kirk and the Starship Enterprise, but they are driven. And to be honest, Paul, I think winning the league title last year sort of disarmed them for the championship. They beat Kilkenny well in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and the championship crept up on them. And I think they weren't as focused as they would normally be. Hence, they were fortunate to an extent to get even out of Munster. This year, I just think the five in a row is a bait that's going to bring the best out of them. It's coming at the right time. If there's any sense of mental fatigue that Ryan had spoken about earlier in general, or physical fatigue, the prospect of doing what Kilkenny, the three powerhouses, Kilkenny, Cork, and Tipperary, have failed to do in the long history of hurling, like I just think that is a massive motivation. But just going back to the game on Sunday, I'd be interested to hear in what Ryan does. Ryan, would Ryan agree with me that Dublin are possibly going downhill?
Yeah, 100%. And I hate saying that. I really, really do hate saying that. But like the success that Limerick are getting now, that didn't happen overnight. Like you look back at 2012, 2013, 2014, development squads, and there was an initiative put in place. I remember reading about it on the paper back then. There was an initiative put in place for the development squads and underage, and I think they got Dalo in 2015 and or possibly 16. And that really drove it. And I think that has been missing in Dublin hurling for the last few years. You look back to 2011, 2012, 2013, when Dublin were doing okay. That was backboned by the Dublin Colleges team from the early 2000s that Conall Keeney, Stephen Hiney, Dotsie O'Callaghan were on. And then those minor teams of Johnny McCaffrey, David Tracy, all that, we'll say that minor team coming through. And it wasn't just one minor team. It was minor team over about 4 or 5 year period. They were consistent at minor level, and that's what came through. And that backboned the senior team there for the few years. Whereas they don't have that now. I know they won Leinster in 2018 at minor, but there's been nothing since. And just the quality that's there is not what was there the previous decade. And you look at the structures, I just think it for the underage structure in Dublin, I think it needs to be revamped. A new initiative coming in, new people getting involved, possibly ex intercounty players from that Dublin team of 2013 or 2011, 12, 13, 14, that era. I think they need to be asked to get back involved. I know a lot of them would want to, and a lot of them would be willing to give up that time, but I don't know, maybe they haven't been asked or whatever. I'll stay out of that politics, but there needs to be that drive there. And also the argument is as well that if you're a 13, 14-year-old and you're the best in your club team at hurling and you're best in the club team of football, which a lot of those lads are, you're looking at the senior team at the moment and you're saying, right, well, if I concentrate in hurling, I get to go up to Corrigan Park and beat Antrim by a point. But if I play football with Dublin, I get the limelight, I get to walk up the steps of the Hogan Stand and hopefully hold the Sam Maguire above my head, where you can't really see that in Dublin hurling at the moment. So you have to say, well, what if you were 14 or what would your priority be as well? So I don't think there's one
Is there
fix
a
that's
lack
needed.
of forwards coming through? Do you think that's fair to say now?
Yeah, well, look, you have Donald Burke. You have some very good forwards, but you don't have an excellent forward that you're relying on for 10 points a game. You know, it might be 6 points from play and then the rest freeze or whatever. Dublin aren't producing them. And I suppose I was thinking it there when John was talking. You're on about the Limerick team and they're gone so big and like there's none of them under 6 foot. That you'd wonder, are the days of the Joe Dean and the Dotsie O'Callaghan, are they really been pushed to one side? Because I can't really think of any small intercounty player now, hurling wise, intercounty player that is really taking games to the opposition. I don't know, I could be wrong now. You might think of someone there like that. Evan Nyland is probably the smallest I can think of. But he is surrounded by very big Galway lads. Do you know, there's no, I can't think of a Joe Dean or a Dáitse Chaillin at the moment, or DJ Carey or Charlie Carter. But like that, all of those four lads could well look after themselves. They didn't have to rely on other lads to do that.
Yeah, there probably isn't, John, is there?
Yeah, while Ryan was talking, I was trying to put on my thinking cap and come up with a 5'6" corner forward or wing back that's in the Tommy Walsh mode of Kilkenny. And I don't think they're out there. I think they're being squeezed out of the game unless they are an exceptional talent. And it was interesting, the game in Turles that Tip played against Galway. Tip were physically bigger on the day, and Galway have a few. Look, Galway have no shortage of classy stick men, very polished hurlers. But you could see on occasions light framed hurlers. And I'm not talking about fellas that are 5'6" or 5'7". These guys could be 5'10" and 5'11", but they're lighter framed, they're slightly built. And when the championship arena is turned into a battleground, you hear all the managers and players talking about the middle third. It's a very difficult arena for a player who's maybe 12 stone, looks super fit, and he's trying to compete against a guy that's 14 or 15 stone and is muscle bound. So hurling has changed so much. I mean, I remember when I was hurling with Tipperary, we used to train on a Tuesday and Friday night, Tuesday and Thursday night if we had a match on a Sunday. And at the time, that was the fashion. And we thought we were as professional as we could be at
Those days are gone,
in
John.
that era. But I would say if Brian was still playing inter-county hurling or I was playing inter-county hurling, we would sign up for what's going on today because you can only sort of prepare the way teams generally prepare in a certain era. And back in the 80s, what we were doing in the 80s would have made the fellas in the 60s look complete amateurs. But I'm just wondering, with every passing decade, there has been a fundamental change in the preparation of teams. But the way things are at the moment, you're kind of scratching your head and saying to yourself, what can teams do in 10 years' time that they're not doing now? But there probably will be some new fads and trends out there that managers and players will be latching onto. But I would agree completely with Ryan that it's very difficult now to sustain an inter-county career for longer than 10 years. Now, I know TJ Reid is an exception with Kilkenny. He's signing up for one more campaign with the Cats. And I often smile to myself when I hear Kilkenny aren't up to much over the last 3 or 4 years. And by their standards, it's been a quiet time for them. They've gone 9 years now without winning an All-Ireland title. They've been beaten in their last four final appearances, twice by Tipperary in 2016 and 2019, and then the last 2 years by Limerick. That's never happened to them before. But at the same time, they're Leinster champions for the past 4 years. They've been in the last two All-Ireland finals. They really shoved it up to Limerick in 2022. And just as Galway found out in the second half of last year's All-Ireland semi-final, when Limerick get to Croke Park and in the second half of those matches, they just reach a level that other teams simply can't compete with. And I remember in last year's semi-final and Kilkenny in the final, Kilkenny and Galway, at times you think they're going to win the match. They were both in strong positions at half time, and yet Limerick just came out in the second half and blew them away. It's like as though Limerick sit back, absorb what you can throw at us, the physical hits, the scores, et cetera, and then they're able to find another gear and just blow teams away. Now, it's not going to last forever, but at the moment, it's very difficult to see how they're going to be toppled. Dublin don't have the armory to do it. Galway on a great day, if they hit a great day and Limerick hit an off day, you'd be saying there is a chance because in the previous year's semi-final, they're only beaten 2 or 3 points. But you know how to get up to Limerick's level is the challenge for all those teams that think to have a chance. because I don't see Limerick coming back to the pack, Ryan. And I just think it's going back to the Dublin situation. I'm sure Micheál Donoghue and Franny Ford and Noel Larkin are investing a huge commitment and they're preparing the team as best they can. But the bottom line is, and I've learned this the hard way as a manager at club and inter-county level over the years, if you have a talent deficit, you can do whatever you want. You can have Clough over you. You can have Cyril Farrell over you. You know, you can have Andy Farrell over you. If you don't have the talent, on certain days you play very well, but you're not going to be winning titles.
Yeah, you need to do it at a consistent level. And like on any given day, and we've seen that in Munster last year, on any given day, Limerick can be bet. But I suppose the way the championship is structured now, it's not like it was but pre-97 when it was one and done for a lot of people. But like now, if you get bet, it's nearly like getting a wounded animal. They come out fighting then the following day. And like the only way you're going to guarantee that Limerick won't win an All-Ireland title is to beat them in the All-Ireland phase. Because if you beat them in Munster, every other team is saying, oh no, what are they after doing? Why did they have to beat them now? Do you know, because it refocuses the mind. And yeah, look, they are the team. I think they're in a pack by themselves. I think behind that, you have Clare, you have Cork, you've Tip, you've Galway, you've Kilkenny. And then I think below that, then I think you have Waterford, which could beat any in the second tier on any given day, but you have Waterford, you've Wexford, you've Dublin, you've Offaly. I'm probably after leaving out someone there now and I'll get crucified in this. But, you know,
our Tipperary colleague, John Bubbles of The Wire, said a couple of months ago that the only place to stop Limerick is in Munster. That if they get out of the province, once they hit Croke Park, they are just...
They're a different animal.
They are, yeah. And they came close to, you know, exiting the Munster Championship last year. And I think because of that experience, I think they'll go where the league takes them over the next couple of weeks. I don't think they'll chase the league title hard. If it falls into their hands, well and good. But I think last year... Like John Kiley's remarkable record, I think he's at 13 or 14 finals between League, All-Ireland and Munster finals, and he's won them all. Like that's just defying logic to some degree.
They're an exceptional, talented group. Yeah. Like they're a once-in-a-lifetime group that come along. And we said that about the Kilkenny team of the mid-2000s, that they were the once-in-a-lifetime team. But I think I think any Kilkenny lad will say it as well. And if you're to do a combined team, you would have a lot of those Kilkenny lads on this Limerick team. But I think as a group and as a panel as well, I do think this Limerick team, they are something special. I don't think the achievements that they do get, I don't think are going to be topped. And if they're going to be topped, it's not going to be for a long, long, long time.
Yeah. Anyway, at least we have some of this match to look forward to ahead of the Cheltenham Festival next week. So that's where I'll be off to on first thing on Monday morning. So I've been having a good run with my GA betting over the past few weeks. So I even backed the Galway Ladies footballers. I thought they were a cracking bet at 7-4. To beat Meath and Ballinasloe last Sunday. So this is a sideline I have. So it keeps me off the streets, I suppose.
Well, any tips for Cheltenham, send them on.
Oh yeah, they'll all be in the Tribune hopefully on Thursday morning, Ryan. So generally I don't do too bad, but it's horse racing is one of those sports you're either into it or you know nothing about. So
yeah, or you can be lucky and get the right tips.
Yeah, true.
Do you have any special tips on the GA markets for our listeners to go for this week, John?
Would you believe it? It's been a fairly busy week in the Tribune so far, and I haven't really looked at sports betting over the weekend or the horses. So, and I don't know what the handicaps are in the National League matches. So, I have no problem sort of normally plumping for something, but no, I haven't done my homework, to be honest, yet. So that won't happen till maybe Friday night or something like that, you know.
So just back to this game, Ryan. I know we kind of went a bit off topic there, but just with the makeup of the Galway team so far, we've been kind of on the podcast every week debating the different positions because Galway are obviously trying a lot of things in this league. Do you expect them to continue experimenting this weekend, or do you think they go as strong as possible?
This, do you know what? I hate saying it because it is kind of disrespectful to Dublin. They can afford to, like, they'll want a good team out because they don't want to get caught by Dublin, especially when there's Galway lads involved in the Dublin setup, because they know the Galway team nearly better than than Shefflin, because they've had nearly all of them at some stage. But they will keep the backbone of a good team, but I think they will put a scatter of lads that are fringe players around it, just to see as they're getting closer to the championship how deep their panel is. Because I'm sure in championship they will pick up, the way it's structured week after week after week, they will pick up a few injuries, no doubt about that. Every team is going to do that, so it's about finding depth. And you see some of the games this year, they've given Donal O'Shea plenty chances this year. They've given Gavin Lee plenty chances this year. Evan Nyland was centre forward all of last year. He's back in corner forward now. Same Owen Lawless, I think he is a cracking player. He was on the Fitzgibbon All-Star team.
Are you surprised Owen Lawless hasn't seen more game time in the league?
No, he started the first game against Westmead and
Yeah.
did everything right that day. So you'd wonder, are they just giving more lads a chance? But I can see him, I won't say being a key team member for the coming season, but I can see him playing parts in the championship this season, whether it's coming on as a sub or starting. He's going to make his championship debut this year. And there's a few as well spattered around, like who I would like to see get extended runs, and I've mentioned him already, is Donal O'Shea. Like he when he has Orly in his hand, it's like a wand. He can do magic things with it. I suppose the only thing that you would, I won't say count against him, but that would come against him is John spoke about that middle third, the way it's a battleground there. And you'd wonder physically, is Donal he's what, maybe he's 5'10", but is he falling into that bracket that John said of the 5'10", 5'11" lad, but is 12 stone and doesn't carry the same physicality that other lads would? Because in that zone, depending on the pitch it's going to be played, obviously, but in that zone, you get the ball, and within 2 steps, you're being hit. You turn, you're being hit by another direction and then another direction. So it's about breaking those tackles. And not, I suppose now he's agile enough to avoid the contact, but sometimes you've no choice. And you wonder, can he ride those tackles and break out and deliver in? I think with time he will. And even if he doesn't put on massive bulk, I think he will. His core stability and everything will develop. But yeah, I'd love to see him get an extended run this year and show what he can do, because he's an exceptional player.
How do you see the makeup of the team, John? Like, obviously, we've seen with 3 and 6, we've seen Fintan obviously play there the last day. Keenan Fahey played 6, Dolly played 7, Adrian Toohey was back. Do you see that back six looking the same?
For Sunday, I'm not too sure. It's possible Garrosh McInerney might be recalled for this game. Certainly, Galway picked their strongest team for the interim game of the year, and I think partially it was because of Dublin's close shave up in Corrigan Park, and also because they're gradually getting back more of the regulars. Now, Daithí Burke at wing back is certainly left field in my view, because he's always been kind of this central figure at full back, mostly where he won most of his All Stars for Galway. And himself and McInerney have switched roles over the past 12, 18 months. And but on what I saw, again, it was no test, but he looked okay there against Antrim. In fairness to him, he was a bit cut for pace in the Tipperary match, but he is only coming back to peak fitness. And Keenan Fahey, I suppose, has been the standout sort of, I won't say find, but the standout discovery in terms of a new role. Keenan would have played mostly in the half forward line last year. He's a big, strong unit, good hurler. He played centre back the last day against Antrim, got on a lot of ball. As somebody who played number six most of my career, and acknowledging that the role has changed considerably and hurling has changed considerably in the period since, the centre back is still the lock to the defence, and in my view, the centre forward has the key, and you're trying to prevent the centre forward from opening your lock. And at times, maybe he drifted too far away from the centre back orthodox space. But that's the way hurling has gone. Like, I mean, as a journalist putting on my writer's cap, years ago, 15 players would be on 15. They would hold their starting positions. Now, a player could be in a position just for the throw in, and you could have six changes within the space of 30 seconds. And you're kind of inclined to give up because the game has become so fluid. Positions have become so fluid. And now you need players to be versatile and to be able to play nearly as well in the half back line midfield and in the half forward line. And the tactics are incredible in hurling. The puck out now is just, it's kind of nine tenths of the law in terms of possession. Back in our day, the goalkeeper poked the ball out. It was man-to-man combat around midfield, or sometimes if he got to the half forward line. But players now are so well conditioned. The ball is lighter. It's traveling much further. You have goalkeepers taking frees 30 yards out from their own post, and they're scoring. And you have Limerick scoring points from all over the field. I mean, that has been their, I suppose, the thing that's made them stand out. They're not a great goal scoring machine for a team that has won so much, but they're able to pick off points from nearly everywhere on the field outside their own 40-yard line. And but going back to Galway, Conor Whelan has been away on his travels. He's just come back for the last couple of games. He's going to improve with game time. He's going to need all the matches he can get. He's the new Galway captain. And I think that's good for Galway management to do, to shake it up. And Sean Lennon, he might be a doubt for Sunday. He went off against Antrim with a slight groin strain. He brings a bit of fire and aggression to the Galway midfield. And Adrian Toohey obviously would have come on for the game. He had started for Galway in quite a while. And I'm delighted to see Conor Cooney playing with renewed confidence at intercounty level. He gets a bad rap from the Galway supporters. And, you know, Conor Cooney had a great campaign in 2017 when Galway won the All-Ireland. He's had many good games for Galway. And he's playing with great confidence at the moment. He scored 4 points from play against Antrim, and Tom Monaghan beside him. He's not your, maybe that's the player, Ryan, we were looking for. He's not the strongest looking player in the world, but he's very gritty, carries the ball into combat, not in the slightest bit intimidated by marking bigger men. And he's doing a job for Galway at centre forward. So I think Galway will field a fairly strong team. They'll be wanting to keep momentum going. I always think it's always better to be winning than losing. And there's nothing better than coming to training on a Tuesday night after winning a match on Sunday. Sometimes when you're losing and you go to training on a Tuesday night, there's inquests, there's postmortems. It becomes a little bit of a chore. And, you know, teams, I think momentum is underestimated. And, you know, you look back at the great Kerry football team, the great Dublin football team more recently, the great Kilkenny hurling team from 2006 to 2015, the Cork team of the 40s, the Tipperary teams of the 60s, they became just winning machines. And that's what the Limerick hurlers are at the moment. And it's the consistency that Galway need. And I think whatever we find out about Galway on Sunday, we're going to learn an awful lot more about them against Limerick the following weekend because it's getting ever closer to the championship.
Yeah, I'm just going to butt in there. I think the way, and I've said this before, the way the league is now, that there's such a quick turnaround to the provincial championship that you'd wonder, like, and especially this year, I think especially the way the league is going to change in next year, you don't want to be stuck in the Division 1B next year. You want to be in Division 1A. You want to be in that top seven. So I think the first few rounds of the league, I think, were more important than previous years because you want to get to that magic 5 points that will nearly guarantee to keep you up in the top three. And then if you get that, because it's getting close to championship, yeah, you'll still have a strong team out depending on who you're playing against. But I think you might, if there's any hint of a niggle or a strain at all, you're going to whip that lad off. And I think we saw it last week in the football with Derry against Dublin. Like, we're expecting this titanic battle up in Celtic Park up in Derry, and you had Derry only putting out half a team with their big names not showing up. So it's and that's because they were top of the league. We nearly guaranteed a league final. So it's very, I won't say is it belittling the league in a lot of ways, but I think if there was another a week or two of more of a gap between, I think teams would prioritize the league that little bit more to lead into the championship.
Yeah, I would agree with Ryan on that because you go back to the National Football League final last year, Mayo beat Galway. Mayo don't win too many national titles. They're the most unluckiest GAA county in. I agree for them. I mean, they should have maybe
I
beaten
don't.
Dublin in two All-Ireland finals.
Yeah, I
It's
don't think many
shocking,
Galway
right?
fans would be grieving listening
I
to that
know
joke.
the two. I know, but I'm not a Galway man. But the two own goals today. Oh my God, such heartache and all that. But they won a very good league final against Galway last year. And if, as Ryan said, there was at least a fortnight before they had to play a championship. 7 days later, they're down in the dumps after losing to Roscommon. I can't see why. I'm not against the split season, but it is very hard on inter-county players because they're going straight away from a tough inter-county season back to their clubs, and it's non-stop. And when you go back to your club doesn't want to be hearing you talking about fatigue and I'm tired and I'm nursing a bit of an injury because you're coming back as one of their key players and they're looking to you for leadership. So you have no time to feel sorry for yourself. It's just a pity the GAA in a general context wouldn't extend inter-county season to at least mid-August. I don't see why they have to wrap up the inter-county scene by the end of July. And I remember when I was Galway manager, we were playing All-Ireland quarter-finals on the Sunday before the Galway races. Now the All-Ireland hurling final is over by 2 weeks before the Galway races happens. And it's just very condensed, not giving players much time to recover. And of course, then the other big handicap of this scenario is that after the second last week in July, you don't have big GAA games until the following March, April. And in terms of PR, I think that's an absolute disaster because rugby is taking a grip in Ireland. And I know you have parents concerned about sending their young lads out to play the game, but what the Irish rugby team are doing at the moment is incredible. And young lads, we all know when we were young, we were following the heroes that were winning. And I think the GAA have a battle on their hands. And I think they've scored an own goal in that context in terms of the PR battle. But look at, I don't have the persuasion or the power to change that. But I think in time, the GAA might look at it and just even if they extended inter-county season a fortnight, I think it would be fair on everybody, including the players that they are supposed to protect and supposed to have the best interests of.
I agree 100% with John there. Like it for me, it's so strange. Like you said, All Ireland final played in July. But what's nearly worse for me is, you have the first round of championship at the start of April, right? For me, inter-county championship is about rock hard ground, hot summer days. And making an event of the whole thing when you're going to it, you're making an event of it. It's the I remember going down to Páirc Uí Chaoimh. It's the car journey down, the sun splitting the rocks. You get down there. There's no need for a hoodie or anything like that because it's a nice warm summer's day. Whereas now in April, the pitches aren't in as good a condition. We spoke earlier about the days of your 5 foot 8, 5 foot 10 intercounty player going. Well, that type of player needs the ground, or would rather the ground rock hard so that the ball is traveling 100 miles an hour. Whereas you're playing intercounty in April, intercounty championship in April, chances are you're knocked out by the end of April, the start of May. Your championship now, you still might have a game or two to go, but you can't qualify. So you're by mid-May, your championship is done, dusted. And it's kind of like, why? And I do understand split season, and there's pros and cons for both the split season and going against the split season, pros and cons for both. But I really think if they can just extend it out, give that little bit of a break between league and championship, then league can be more prioritized. You'll get better crowds out of, more publicity out of, better games. Then the provincial championship starts. That's played off with the round robin the way it is now with the league format. And then it's lining you up for championship when the ground is run. We'll say if the championship, the All-Ireland series is run in July and running into August and the second week of August, at the end of the builders' holidays, that's when your All-Ireland final is. And I think that would contribute, and then maybe the football the week after, or maybe have the camogie and hurling on the same weekend, have the camogie on the Saturday, hurling on the Sunday or whatever. I don't know, but I just think more can be done to promote the game, and I think get the best games out there, because I think the best games are going to be played in August.
Just to come back to that on say when you're talking there about the structure of the season, just from an outside view here, Ryan, do you think the league final is more of a, well, the league semi-final obviously first for Galway, but do you think that's a real target? No disrespect to Carlow, but that's who Galway are playing first. Do you feel that's why maybe they've been on record saying that they want to get to the league semi-final this year compared to previous years?
I think all teams concerned with the league, well, I suppose it depends on what type of position you're coming from. The likes of Liam Cahill, he would love to see silverware back in tip to say he's progressing tip hurling. The same Davy Fitz would love it. You look at Keith Rosser down in Wexford, they would love nothing more than to get a league title. But there's obviously going to, with those teams that are coming to the tail end of the league, whether it's a semi-final or final, they're going to have one eye on the championship. And who are they playing a week after the league final, or 2 weeks after the league semi-final, or 3 weeks, whatever the case is? And if you're in Munster and first round of the league, you're playing against Limerick, or you're playing against Clare or Cork or whoever, you can pick any of the teams, you're going to be saying, right, well, that's who I need, because I can win the league, but if I don't even make it out of Munster, well, it's a failure of a year to the player public or tip public, whatever it is. You've had a bad year. Whereas if you, and no disrespect to anyone, I think they'll accept it themselves, but if you are Galway and you're playing Clare the first round of the league, you say, well, do you know what? We can aim for another day out before we play Carlow in the championship. So it all depends on what your schedule is as regards games and who those games are going to be against.
John, just you mentioned earlier on, you expect Galway to win this weekend, that Dublin are going downhill. Do you expect Galway to dish out a hammering this weekend?
I don't think so. Unless Dublin don't turn up at all. And I wouldn't expect that. I think there's too many subplots to this fixture, especially the fact, as I said earlier, Micheál, Frenny and Noel, that would be the last thing they would want, would to be a team that they're over getting mauled by a team that they used to manage. And human nature being human nature, we all have our pride. I Looking at everything, you'd be inclined to think that Dublin could get a bit of a trimming on Sunday, like they did in Croke Park against Limerick. But and Ryan probably knows this better than I do, but Dublin have caused Galway plenty of hardship down through the years, and Galway are one of the teams that Dublin don't traditionally fear. In fact, I think Dublin have beaten Galway as much in the championship as the other way around. So I think this is a more important fixture, though, for Dublin on Sunday. They're on a sticky run. Form hasn't been great. The only points they picked up were against Antrim, and they were lucky to do so. And I think Dublin are in dire need of a significant fillip. That doesn't mean they're going to win or even come close to it. But if they were only beaten 6 or 7 points on Sunday and produced a performance that gives them something to build on for the championship, I think that's as good or as much as Dublin can hope for. And Galway, when they're in the mood and they're coming up against a team that's not in the zone, Galway are very capable of dishing out a big defeat to the opposition. But on the other hand, if Dublin fall badly on Sunday, given the management that they have and the circumstances that they find themselves in coming back to their own place at the weekend, you'd really be worried for Dublin for the rest of the year. So I think there's a lot at stake for Dublin. I would expect them to be very competitive, and I wouldn't be surprised if they produce significantly their best performance of the year so far.
Yeah, look, I agree. I would hope that Dublin would put up a good performance. I'd love to see them win, and win by just even a point. I'd be happy with. But going down to Galway, it's not a nice place. You'll have the wind blowing in, and it could
Did
be
you
blowing.
hate did you hate it as a player going there?
Hated, absolutely hated it, because generally when we go down there, it's league. So the chances are it's going to be raining and wet, and you're going to the west of Ireland where it's generally raining anyway. And like it's just so it's a terrible place to play, because and I don't mean that by anyone working there. It's just it's so unpredictable. The wind could be blowing down into the Salt Hill Clubhouse in the first half, and then you come out in the start of the second half and it's blowing the opposite way. It's just it's terrible there. And yeah, and there's a good chance, right? I know we've just gone into March, but it's still winter. Chances are there's going to be a splatter of rain there. Even when they leave Dublin on Sunday morning, the sun could be splitting the rocks. But by the time they get down to Galway, there's a chance there. The clouds are after coming in over the Aran Islands and sailing in towards Salt Hill, and it'll be raining. It's not a great place to go. I would love to see Dublin get a win, and it will show a lot of character and what they're made of and what their intent is for the year ahead. But
Do
like
you
that,
think if they don't react this weekend, can you see the season just getting worse?
I will be hoping for a good performance, regardless of a win, lose, or draw. I'll be hoping for a good performance. What I really don't want is a bit of a trimming, and when I say trimming, I mean by an 8-9 point beating. Like I know they put up an okay score against Limerick, but Limerick still beat them by 18 points. Anything like that, and you can just see the confidence being drained from them. And it's very, very hard when you get a few defeats like that in the league. It's very hard to get that confidence back up again, especially coming to the end of the league when they will want that bit of confidence. Then it will add more significance to the game the week after, when they're playing their last game against Wexford, and that could possibly decide who goes up, or sorry, who goes into the top division. Or sorry, not against Wexford,
Westmeath.
Westmeath. Sorry,
Yeah.
Westmeath. So it adds that importance to the game this weekend, because they'll want to win. If they don't win, well, they'll want everyone to come through, fighting fit and not pick up any injuries, but they'll also want everyone to come through with a bit of confidence. And that's why I'm saying the performance is the most important thing. Now, you spoke about the getting bet, and John spoke about gambling there earlier on. Paddy Power rarely gets it wrong, right? And the handicap is Galway -8. So like 8 points, that's what Paddy Power expecting, like, and I'd see 8 points as a bit of a trimming. So it's like, look, it's not, if you're just studying form, and that's what most gamblers would do, you're saying Dublin aren't in a good position, but at the same time, Dublin are Galway's bogey team. Galway won All Ireland in 2017, and 2 years later went to Parnell Park. And I know you might say it's 2 years later, but still only 2 years after winning All Ireland, and the following year getting bet in All Ireland final by Limerick by a point. Like 2 years later, getting bet in Parnell Park and being knocked out of the championship. So Dublin, like you said, John, Dublin do not fear Galway. But then again, that team that you beat Galway on a consistent basis, and it was over and back for a while, but we're never afraid of Galway. How many of that team are there now? And how many of that team, and I know it was very close last year in the first half, you were saying Dublin are in a great position, but then Galway got on top in the second half, and really they showed their authority in the second half. So you wonder, is there scar tissue with that still there? But look, there's a lot of things that you could say about this weekend. What I am hoping for is just a good Dublin performance. That's all I would be happy with, whether it's win, lose or draw, a good performance, and then to go into the Westmeath game with a bit of confidence.
Just before we do finish, from the Galway perspective, what's the one thing, John, you think they'll be looking for this weekend?
Well, I think this is probably their third most difficult fixture so far this year.
Yeah.
They've lost the first two to Wexford and Tipperary. I know they played Dublin in the Walsh Cup, but the season is moving on. And, the defeat for Galway on Sunday is unthinkable. And especially given that Dublin are struggling for form. Now, Hurling needs a strong Dublin. And, you know, they made great shapes under Anthony Daly, and Ryan was a key component of that team. And, you know, in a wider sporting context, the day that Dublin lost to Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final, that was their chance. And I think...
Thanks, John.
I might be doing Ryan a disservice. I think you got sent off on a second yellow card, which was a shocking decision. As a hurling man, I just thought it was unjustifiable. And it arguably cost Dublin the game because he had Cork on the ropes. And there was a great buzz about Dublin hurling at that time. And it was good for the game. It was good for the Leinster Championship in particular. They won a league title, I think, was it back in 2012. And I think the blitz Galway in the Leinster Championship when Anthony Cunningham was over Galway. I remember playing Dublin in the Leinster semi-final in Tullamore. And I think Dublin were reduced to 14 players early on, and the Beach as well. And but have Dublin got the players of that calibre and that temperament and that belief to have a right cut at Galway and teams like Galway over the coming months? There's no hard evidence to suggest that they will. Now, Ryan says the spread on Sunday is 8 points. My good instinct would be to back Galway to cover the handicap. That's my good instinct as of now. Notwithstanding the fact that I expect Dublin to really empty themselves to find something that can cling to for the rest of the season. But I don't think Galway will be any mood to hand out any favours at the weekend. But in the overall scheme of things, it's I know the championship is only 4 or 5 weeks away. It seems crazy to be even thinking about it in those terms. I mean, we were interviewing Pádraig Joyce after the Monaghan game last Sunday, and he said they were out in this day 5 weeks. And it's hard to get your head around such a condensed fixture schedule. So teams are building up for the championship. And as I said earlier, if Dublin are way off it on Sunday, given the background to the fixture, I really don't think they're going anywhere. So I expect Galway to win. I think the only issue is at stake really is how much to win by. And I think they could win by more than 8 points. Sorry, Ryan.
No, I do agree, but I don't want it. The head
Right.
is saying one thing, the heart is saying another. I do
Yeah.
agree with you, but I'm just hoping for a good performance from Dublin. And look, I'd be happy with a 3-4, 5, even 5 point defeat. They can have confidence from that, but yeah, I think the head is saying something different.
Yeah.
Just
We have to
before
listen to our
you
heads.
do, just before we do finish, Ryan, like if you were Galway, what's the one thing you're chasing after this weekend against Dublin?
I'll be setting down America against Dublin because they will be playing them in the championship in a few weeks' time. So you want to sow that seed of doubt in their mind, and then watch it grow. Because like that, right, like I said earlier in the show, in Leinster for the championship, you're gonna have Kilkenny and Galway, right? After that, to guarantee yourself in the top three, you're gonna have to beat Dublin and Wexford. If they can beat them, both of them, no disrespect to Carroll and Antrim, but that should be sorted. But if you can beat Dublin and Wexford, you're in Leinster final, right? Regardless of if Kilkenny beats you along the way, you're still in Leinster final. You get a second bite of the cherry against Kilkenny, if they're there, obviously. And anything can happen then because it's not a knockout game, but it has knockout feel to it because it is a final. So yeah, I think from a Galway perspective this weekend, you're going to, I still think one or two fringe players are going to be played, and introduced throughout the game. But I certainly think you want to put up a big score. You're on your own patch. I suppose they'll use the motivation against that. Oh, you're coming up against your own lads here because it's a Galway backroom team. All the backroom team, even coach, is a Galway man. So. Yeah, you want to sow that seed in their head and have the upper hand come championship and just remind them that yeah, we've hockeyed you once this year. Now we're going to do it again.
Well, that's Galway Dublin at Pier Stadium on Sunday, where Galway will welcome the Dubs. But that's all we do have time for on today's podcast. Thanks to Ryan and John for coming on.
Absolutely hate it because generally when we go down there, it's league. So the chances are it's going to be raining and wet, and you're going to the west of Ireland where it's generally raining anyway. And like it's just so it's a terrible place to play because, and I don't mean that by anyone working there. It's just it's so unpredictable. The